once we get through this tariff talk, once we get through this Mexico, Canada, China, we all come to some sort of an understanding, which I think it will happen. This is the storm before the calm. That's what this is. I've been waiting to use it. We're heading into a seasonally good time. So remember, we have like three bad months of the year, August, September, and February. And so it's right on schedule. We usually have inflections in March and in October. So again, it's anyone's guess what actually takes place. You know, I could be as wrong as anyone right now. But this is going along to schedule, that we could have a market inflection in March, and it turns around and heads up and just rallies through the spring. We have,
All right. Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show, presented by ARPG and the very intelligent looking Matt Dahl. Love the glasses. You got your nerd look going today, man. I dig it.
Yeah, it fits my personality very, very well. So my wife was tired of me, not being able to see properly. So now that
you got like a very, I don't know, like tech geek thing going on right now, right? You got the glasses, you got the mock t-shirt, but with the slick back hair.
You're right.
I mean, like it's very Steve Jobs-esque.
There is not a person on planet Earth who is worse with computers than me. Like, honestly, I can barely work a calculator.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, been a little while. We got a four-week break that we've had here. You've been out traveling the world and doing whatever smart tech geek wannabes do in their spare time. So it's been a little while, and the market's given us some stuff to talk about in our absence.
Most certainly has. Well, as we sit here today on March the 7th, we are a mere 11 trading days away from the all-time closing high on February 19th, 61.44. It seems like a lifetime ago. It really does, you know. And we're getting calls and emails from clients like, hey, what are we doing, with this market? Should we be doing anything? Yeah, we should be buying this market. Exactly what we should be doing right now is buying this market. There's nothing. We have seen some little warning signs as far as the consumer is concerned. But the economy is firing on all cylinders. It's doing just fine. Obviously, this pullback has been tariff related. There's nothing effectively fundamental happening right now. We had some reports come out, some survey reports like the Michigan, the UMich sentiment report, and inflation surveys that came out at the end of February that weren't so great. But these were surveys. These weren't hard data, from behavior. These were just surveys of what people think will happen. And so the market has been very quick to react to these things. And we think that's a result of just how stretched the valuation was, right? Remember we talked about, we were at 22.58 times earnings, January, when we got to 61.44, we were, basically just under 23 times earnings, 22.6 times, I believe we were. So when you're there at that level of value, unless everything goes exactly perfect according to script, there's going to be a pullback. And sometimes those pullbacks can be pretty quick, and as much as we're wrong, sometimes we're right. We talked about this on the January 11th show, that sometime between January 15th and March 15th, I do see this thing pulling back somewhere between, 5 and 10%. I can see it getting to 5,600. So that's 7, 8, 9% pullback. And as we sit here, we're down 8% from 11 trading days ago. It happened pretty quickly. I didn't think it would happen as fast as it did, but nonetheless, here we are. But, that's okay. What this is an opportunity. I talked about this actually, I think it was two shows ago, in regards to volatility in an upward sense, right? So we know we have the best days in the market are usually during bear markets. The best days in the markets usually are at the tail end of these flush outs, right? They kind of reprice the market and bring opportunity. Because again, we if you look at earnings, earnings at the beginning of the year, estimates for 2025 were 270 and change a share. Now they're just under 270 a share. So they've lost 80 cents in earnings expectations for the entire year over the course of 2 months. So there's really nothing there. Earnings have, we're basically done with earnings for this quarter. 495% of companies have reported, so 99% have reported. 77%, 78% are beating by a median of 6%. You know, again, earnings are strong. All of the big tech names did really, really well. Some of them missed revenues, but for the most part, earnings came in really, really strong. So what we don't want to do is look at this sort of this little pullback that is in large part due to nothing more than some sentiment data. And frankly, obviously, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is the tariffs. It's been the tariffs that have caused this tremendous amount of uncertainty. And it's that uncertainty that can kind of be your friend, right? It's uncertainty in a good market. What we love is, remember we've talked about this, we love bad markets in a good economy.
Yeah.
We don't love great markets in a bad economy. That's a recipe for disaster. But we have, I'm going to let you apologize for that Carolina Panthers mug.
Okay. It apologizes for itself.
Yeah. About 14 Sundays a year. It apologizes.
Easily, yeah. Nobody can make fun of a Panthers fan because, I mean, we're a Panthers fan. You know what I mean? Like, you can't pick on a Panthers fan. We've not won anything ever, like, in 25, 30 years, whatever it's been. We're just a constant sea of disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, you're already being made fun of.
That's right.
Like going to the stadium. So
we're made fun of by our very nature.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the nature of this pullback has been, again, largely sentiment and tariff related. So we don't really see anything inherently wrong here. You know, although, I mean, it is worth noting that there have been a few little cracks. In fact, this came out yesterday. Auto loans, right? They are at their highest 60-day delinquency ever. It's a 0.99. So of all the auto loans out there, effectively 1% of them are 60 days or more, or 60 days late. And that's pretty high. And then on the 30 days, as far as auto loans that are 30 days or more past due, it's 3.17%. That's the highest since the fourth quarter of 2009. So, you know, there are some sort of, I wouldn't call them necessarily canary in the coal mine, but there are some cracks in the armor that we may need to start paying attention to. We don't want to just say, hey, you know, let's just go forward with this with our eyes closed and put on a helmet and just roll through it, because sometimes these things can develop into something. But, you know, what we do have, something we haven't had in many, many years, right, is we've got bullets in the chamber now. So if we start to feel some of these pressures, these consumer pressures start to invade consumer behavior, right? And we start to see retail sales really start to fall. We start to see issues in the labor market, God forbid, right? Well, now we're coming from a 4.5% upper bound policy rate that we can come all the way. He's got, Jay Powell's got a lot of room to really move from here. Whereas before, you know, before he started raising rates, there was he had no arrows in the quiver. We're also, there's $40 billion a month in QT right now. So they can also turn that off pretty quickly, right? They can become a pretty big buyer of treasuries pretty quickly, right? And obviously lower those rates as well. So we actually have a lot of, the economy is doing well. Earnings are doing really, really well. Consumer is doing well. However, there are some things we need to pay attention to. And for instance, jobs report came out today, and because I think that was the biggest issue for the market sell-off today, actually. Jobs came out at 151,000 jobs created for the month of November, okay, on 160,000 consensus. Okay, is that worth really noting? Not really. The one-year average is 162.25, okay? So we're within, you know, spitting distance of the one-year average anyhow. There's been months that have been lower than this. There have been months higher than this. So this is a pretty average-ish month, for all intent and purpose. So, you know, there's a lot to kind of take in. And we kind of started, you know, this year with our land of confusion. And it is absolutely, absolutely coming to fruition.
Well, and I'm looking at it right now. I mean, and this actually will segue very well into another thing that we talked about yesterday. Your sell-off that you keep talking about today has evaporated in the time that we've been on this recording, right? Because as right this very second at 1:16 Eastern on March 6th, the market is actually relatively flat. Actually, S&P is up 7 basis points right now for the day. So I'm sitting here listening to this sell-off you're talking about, and I'm looking at the market and I'm thinking that doesn't really jive because in the 16 minutes we've been recording, it's been erased. But that goes to something that we talked about yesterday, and that volatility, whether it's upside volatility or downside volatility, volatility is something that you don't want to try to time, right? The more volatile the market, the more dangerous it is to try to time the market, right? And I know we talked about this yesterday on our call that, you know, I kind of teased you a little bit about being wrong, calling for the pullback. And then
there's
the market.
Plenty to tease.
That's right. So now here we are 5-6 weeks later, and now you're right, right? So like the exact same thing that you said on January 11th, you looked very wrong on January 18th or 25th. Now on March 7th, you look very smart, literally and figuratively, I guess. So the difference is simply timing, right? Where you were wrong then, now you're right. So that's why we don't try to time markets. And the more volatile they are, the more dangerous it is to try to time those markets.
Right. So I attribute me being right to the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
100% is the glasses.
Clearly, obviously, yeah.
So here's the thing about market timing. You're going to be wrong. You're not going to be, you're wrong. You're going to be wrong. Okay. If you're trying to price the market against fair value and maybe you don't want to buy it where it's too expensive, that I can understand that. But if you're trying to pick a bottom and trying to sell at the top because you think it's overbought or oversold, you're going to be wrong. Okay. You just will. And the professionals know that. So that's why we don't do that. Okay. But you know, to your point of, yeah, there is volatility. And if you try to time the market, you're absolutely going to get, you know, your arms ripped off. Fundstrat came out with a phenomenal piece yesterday. Actually came out, we saw Wednesday, and he actually talked about it a little bit publicly yesterday. I kind of wish he wouldn't have because it was so good. You know, I wanted to keep it to myself, right? But it's called the Rule of 10 Days, right? And he talks about, if you look since 1928, the S&P has returned 8% annually. Okay, so for 97 years, it's returned 8%, okay? Now, if you take, there's roughly 210 trading days every year, okay? So if you take out the best 10 days out of each year, leaving the other 200 in, your return goes from, 8% to minus 13. I'm going to say that again because it's worth repeating. If you just take out the 10 best days of the year and leave the other 200 in, your return goes from 8% to negative 13%. That's how important those good 10 days are to the market. Now, this isn't just something that's, you know, that happened in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. Since 2015, the annual return on the S&P 500 has been 12%, okay? Again, about 210 trading days per year. If you take out the top 10 days out of each year, your return goes from 12% to minus 10%, a 22% swing just by those 10 days. So, you know, for someone who's going to go in there and try to time that and nail that and get that, okay, you are, one, you're going to get it wrong. Two, you're playing with fire. And three, you're absolutely going to lose money trying it. So that's why the fundamental side is so, so important. You have to make certain that the position that you take are buttressed. They're supported by solid earnings, good growth rates, good capital structures, good leadership, all of those things that will take you through these ups and downs in the market, because there's nothing anyone can do, right? The market, when the market decides it wants to sell off, whether it's tariffs, whether it's Russia, Ukraine, whether it's interest rates, whatever it's going to do, when the market decides it wants to sell off in a macro sense or just a single stocks, it's going to do that. So if you haven't done your homework and put in good positions with good market caps, with good leadership, with solid balance sheets, with good earnings growth, with good revenue growth, and they have not only provided good guidance, but have met those guidances for, you know, a substantial period of time, then you're going to be, then you're going to be as a professional or even as an individual investor, you're going to be relatively uncertain about the outcome. And it's that uncertainty that will cause you to make an emotional rash decision and maybe sell at the bottom. Okay. And that's why we don't, you know, we don't need to worry about those things because we've done the homework on the fundamental side. We know, okay, yes, we know NVIDIA is down from almost 150. It's down to about 110. Okay. However, am I confident they're going to grow by 50, their earnings by 50% over the next year? I am. And am I, so if I buy it today, am I buying at a discount? I think I am, you know, and that's what we look through. So, you know, do you think you can nail those 10 best days? No, you can't. No one can. Blackwell can't. You know, the machine from, you know, any AI machine, there's no machine out there that can do that. Okay. There's no human that can do it. It's impossible. So you have to be invested for the long term and understanding what you're investing in, why you're investing in it, not just, oh, somebody gave me a hot stock tip. Okay. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean their earnings are growing? Their revenue is growing. They're increasing their total addressable market to a growth sector of the world. What does that mean? Do you think their stock price is just going to continue to go up? You know, we took a position in Okta yesterday, a really great company. Looks like it has about a 20% annualized growth. It's showing about 14-15% annualized. I think it's going to come closer to 20%. Trades at about 35 times earnings. It looks really good. It's a kind of a cybersecurity software play, about 6,000 employees, really strong company, really good guidance. They've based out for a long, long time, and we're starting to really see some good, decent price action, but that price action is a result of the fundamental side. So, you know, we're going to put this position in and see how it works and then, you know, go from there. But, you know, we didn't take a position hoping that it's going to go up. We took a position based on those future earnings that we're going to have a year from now, 2 years from now, folded back into the current price.
Yeah. I was thinking while you were talking there, and this is not going to be the best analogy ever. It might even be one of the worst analogies ever, but we're going to roll it out. We're going to roll with it anyway, just kind of see how it goes. I went to McDonald's like an hour before the show. Okay. Now I was starving. I would have eaten pretty much anything that McDonald's had on the menu. But the way I decided what I was going to have for lunch today is I went to the McDeals menu in the app or whatever, and I looked to see what the deals were and what was what matched up with my appetite. And I didn't necessarily know if I was getting French fries until I saw that it was French Fry Friday, and you could get a free order of fries with any purchase. So all of a sudden, I'm getting French fries. I also got a McChicken sandwich because they were $1.99 with the purchase of something else. I ended up getting like a ridiculous amount of food for about $6. Because I just went value shopping, right? Now, there's other days where if I want a Chick-fil-A sandwich, I'm getting a Chick-fil-A sandwich. I don't care if they charge $12 for that sandwich that day. I'm going to get that sandwich. Either of those can be analogous to the way people invest. Some people are going to invest in quality no matter what the cost. That's growth at any, you know, growth at a reasonable price, or I've even heard people say growth at any price in some markets. You can certainly be a good value investor, but it wouldn't make any sense whatsoever for me to try to bet on what McDonald's is going to price their chicken nuggets next week, or what Chick-fil-A's price is going to, you know, do on their French fries next week. You can take a snapshot of where you are right now and make an intelligent decision based on what the relative value of one item is versus another, or one stock versus another, or one investment class or asset class versus another. But to try to gamble or bet, basically, or speculate is the official term, on strictly, we think it's going to be worth more tomorrow based on what? Based on the fact that we just think it's low today and will be higher tomorrow. That's not a very intelligent way to go about it. So I don't know what fast food menu prices and app deals has to do with the stock market, but it feels like there's something relevant in all that. Can you turn that into an intelligent investment thought?
First of all, I am thoroughly impressed that you had that much McDonald's food and you're not sleeping right now.
Dude, I was hungry. I ate my complete fill. I don't think I could have eaten any more and stayed awake, but I maxed out.
Yeah. I'm telling you, if I have fast food, I must change my clothes and put a little hat on with a cotton ball at the end and walk around the house with a candle because I'm going to go that night.
Yeah.
You know, I get sleepy. So I'm impressed that you're here talking. I'd be yawning the entire time. So what you did is you went value shopping. Nothing wrong with that. You got a lot for a good price. So in the stock market, people go value shopping, and they get a lot of stock, and it's not necessarily the price of the stock, but they get a lot of earnings for the price that they pay. But what they tend to get is a value trap, right? They don't get a lot of growth. They get the multiple. They get the low multiple, but they don't get the good growth. Like buying
that. By the way, that's the Burger King chicken nugget. By the way, when Burger King came out with the chicken nuggets that were like 20 nuggets for $1.99, that's when I realized this is not chicken anymore, and I'm not eating that. So there does come a point in time where it's just too cheap, and that it's no longer investable, right?
Yeah, but you can those chicken nuggets, you can blow big bubbles with them and stick them under your desk.
Yeah,
you know.
You did have that angle. Yeah, they were a multi-use food item.
Yeah, you know, you probably, if you have a flat tire, you can just plug your tire with it. Whatever you need to do, throw them at people. So, and that gets me to a bigger point of quality, right? People say, oh, in times like this, we want to buy high quality stocks. Okay, what does that mean? What does a high quality stock mean? Does it mean quality value, like you're buying a low multiple company, a blue chip company that's stable, has a solid balance, and that's the standard definition of a quality company. It's got great balance sheet, it's got a decent dividend, it's got a tremendous amount of cash flow. That cash flow is not going to be impacted materially by what's ever going on in the economy at the moment, or any issues with interest rates. It's not going to have there's not a lot of exogenous events that's going to affect that company. That's what they call a quality company. And I get that. However, I've always looked at it from, well, depending on what your time frame is, quality to me is dependable growth. Okay? Dependable growth above the market. Okay. That to me is quality. If I can look at a company and say, okay, the S&P is going to grow its earnings by, you know, 14.5% this year. What companies that are better than the average company on the S&P, okay, as far as market cap goes, as far as balance sheet goes, it's going to grow by more than 14.5%, okay, and has a multiple that reflects a lower PEG ratio, okay? So if I'm buying a company, so if the S&P is going to grow by 14%, and we have a multiple on the S&P of 21 times, we have a 1.5 times PEG ratio. So if I'm looking for a company, well, this company's going to grow by 20%. Okay. But if I'm buying it at 40 times, now I'm buying it at two times growth multiple. So, but if I can find that same company less than 30 times earnings, because now we're below 1.5, that to me, and it's dependable. Again, it's got a good balance sheet. It's got a good income statement. It's got good leadership. It's met its guidance, you know, in the past. That to me is quality, you know, and that sauce that I like to use to bring that alpha over time.
Yeah, and I think that to the point that you made there, I mean, there's a lot of different disciplines that you can use to evaluate what's your criteria going to be. I mean, just go through a mutual fund company's lineup. You've got dividend, you've got growth, you've got value, you've got quality. I mean, there's a lot of different types of disciplines, but most of them, and pretty much all of the good ones, are not simply speculation and just betting on which direction the market's going to go, right? I mean, I think that's that fundamental process that you talk about, and it's, you don't want to time the market as much as you want to price the market and buy at good time. You said right now you're buying hand over fist, right? Because 100%. You see value now.
This is a President's Day mattress sale for the markets right now. I am buying this.
Yeah. So you are going shopping, so to speak, right this second, because there are deals. 6 weeks ago, when you said that, you know, when you kind of called for a little bit of a cool down, or kind of said that you thought the market was a little bit stretched, you weren't buying hand over fist at that time. because that's kind of the equivalent of my McDonald's fries being $4.50, right? I mean, they're good fries. Are they worth $4.50? Maybe if I absolutely have to have French fries, I can pay for that. But I bought them today because they were cheap. So now you're getting that opportunity to really go shopping because you see value in the market now. So there's a difference between trying to time the market and trying to price it. So you can make the argument, I suppose, if you really wanted to, that if you're buying a lot now and you weren't buying 6 weeks ago, how are you not timing the market? Isn't that timing the market? No, it's not. You weren't necessarily calling for when the next sale was going to be. You just said you were going to wait to go shopping until there was a sale.
That's it. That's all. Couldn't have said it better myself. That, you know, we don't time the market, we price the market. Professional money managers buy good future value, right? We look at the price of the security, we look at the price of the indice, we look at the price of whatever it may be against the a risk-free discounted cash flow rate. And we say, okay, is this too high or too low? Okay, well, I think it's probably too high right now. So I don't think it's a good, just because the money's sitting here in cash doesn't mean we need to just allocate. There's plenty of places we can put it for free, easy or free, stable, 1 to 3 month treasury bills and get something on it while we're waiting, okay? Because the opportunity will appear, okay? When it will appear, how deep it will appear, no one knows, okay? But, don't get me wrong, it's not something you want to just sit there and, well, I'm going to wait until, the market bottoms and I'm going to buy it. You know, we can be pretty confident in times of the market sitting at 22.6 times earnings and we're seeing inflation not cooperate and yields skyrocket. Like this is what we're paid to do. We know this is a recipe for kind of a pullback, and if you look at the interest rates are sort of, they're whipping around. Monday, the 10-year was at 4.12. It got as high as, 4.34 yesterday. You're talking about 22 basis points in 4 days. The thing is, we're having a lot of volatility, not only in the equity markets, but on the fixed income side as well. So, you can really get yourself in trouble by trying to sort of time the equity markets or even time the bond markets. It's a good time to price, you can price those things against fair value, against future value. But to try to time it, or for instance, when the market was high in January and then into on February 19th, how many people were screaming, we're at the top, let's sell? Okay. That's timing the market. Okay. No one, because they're going to get it wrong. Okay. How many people were, let's just say today was the bottom. I think we hit 5666 on the S&P. That is likely a very, I'm not going to say it is the bottom. No one can do that. But based on the Elliott wave structure, based on where the market's living inside of the Keltner channel, based on the symbolic countdowns and the DeMarc structure, this appears to be very, very, very close to the end of this pullback. Okay, so let me just use the canned phrase to keep everybody safe here. I think we're closer to the end of this pullback than we are to the beginning of it, right? Okay, but who's to know? If I buy today, if I allocate money today, which I am, okay, does that mean it's the bottom of the market? Am I trying to time the market? No. I like the value here. It might from here, this market could lose another 10%. Doesn't change anything, okay? Doesn't mean we time the market poorly. It means we price the market for fair value 9, 15, 18, 24 months out, and it looked good, okay? Yeah. So,
I use the analogy a lot, that it's sort of like the process is similar, I guess, to the process that meteorologists use for the weather, right? They can use the information, use the data, use the jet streams and the barometric pressures and all these different things to kind of give you an idea of, we think next week it's going to be warmer. We think next week it's going to be cooler. We think there's a good chance for rain tomorrow, or there's a chance for thunderstorms, whatever. But when we had tornado warnings here a couple of days ago, a tornado warning doesn't mean they're coming out and saying there's going to be a tornado on this street at this time and it's going to cause this much damage. They're just looking at the information and basically pegging a probability to say that certain risks are higher now than they were at another time. And I think it's very similar to the way our work is sometimes. You're taking the data available and using that to make an educated decision based on probability or based on historical data, but there's a huge difference between that and trying to make a bold prediction and calling tops and bottoms. And that's basically a clickbait strategy or a way to get eyeballs. That's not a good investment strategy.
No, I mean, you can look at some of the indicators, like of the bull, the AAII, the American Association of Individual Investors, their bull bear rate right now, there's a minus 42% reading, which means there is 42% more bears than there is bulls. Okay. So normally when bulls get under 20%, that's your time to buy because that's the contrarian indicator and we're there. So, you know, again, there's a lot of indicators out there that you can use to let you know if the market it's a good time to buy or whatever. But if you have that fundamental backdrop behind you and you know that you don't have to worry about it because, well, you know, the companies that we're investing, whether it's Amazon or Google or TSM or Costco or Visa or whomever, all of these companies have great earnings. They have great earnings growth. They have great earnings guidance. They have their addressable markets are massive. And there is no danger of them going away, right? Or having a material contraction when obviously the world is, although it's going through a bit of a consternation right now, the world is very slowly coming to an agreement right now, not in a painless way, but a bit of a painful way, actually. We're seeing that in the markets. But the world is coming to an agreement of, okay, I think we all need to talk with each other. I think we all need to stop grifting from each, you know, grifting from the US, and let's all talk, let's all get back to business, and let's make this thing work. So, and that is in and of itself good.
Yeah. So you used a line yesterday. I just want to make sure we get it in somewhere. I think you said a client used this phrase. We went from the Trump bump to the Trump slump. How much of what's going on in the market in the last few weeks is directly attributable to Trump compared to just or something that Trump has done or something Trump has said or Trump being Trump or whatever compared to just, hey, the market was stretched and stretched markets are going to pull back?
Yeah, I think a lot of the movement after the election, obviously, when the markets went parabolic, was absolutely just purely emotional. It was after the election. Maybe some of that would have happened if Harris won. Who knows? But I think there was a lot of the animal spirits came back in because of Trump, because they remember his first term. They know he's pro-business and he's pro, you know, low regulation. And now we're going through, a Trump slump. And not that he's not pro-business or not he's not ultimately going to be good for the markets and the economy. He's putting these tariffs in place, which bring a tremendous amount of uncertainty. And the other thing the tariffs do, and we talked about this before, was they all thought it was going to be, you know, bad for inflation and cause interest rates to go up. And we sort of took a contrarian approach saying, no, what we look at is from the PCE is if we get these tariffs and it causes prices to go up, I think people are going to spend their money in a different way and it could actually cool the economy, causing an acceleration of rate cuts and causing rates to go down. Now, again, we started the year at 457. Here we are at 425. We've been as low as 412. Rate cuts have now gone. Now they're talking about the cooling effect economically that these tariffs are going to have. And now the rate cut in May, the probability has gone from basically 12% a few weeks ago up to almost 50% now. So like 44, 45%. So we look at this tariff thing as, yeah, it might be a little bit of, it might have an economic cooling effect in the short term. But again, back to the Fed, there's a put now and he's got tools to do it. He can go from QT to neutral to QE to cutting rates. So there's a lot of ammunition at his disposal. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think it's probably going to be ultimately a good thing. I think is what it's going to do. It's the idea is to open the barriers globally for trade. That's what it really is about. And I think it will be accomplished. But it's not going to be a painless process. So what I think this is more than anything, we've had this consternation. But once we get through this tariff talk, once we get through this Mexico, Canada, China, we all come to some sort of an understanding, which I think it will happen. This is the storm before the calm. That's what this is. I've been waiting to use that. This is the storm before the calm. That's what this is. I think there's going to be, we're heading into a seasonally good time. So remember, we have like three bad months of the year. August, September, and February. It's so it's right on schedule. We usually have inflections in March and in October. So I, again, it's anyone's guess what actually takes place. You know, I could be as wrong as anyone right now, but this is going along to schedule that we could have a market inflection in March, and it turns around and heads up and just rallies through the spring. We have a, you know, the VIX pulls back down from the 25, 26 range back into the mid-teens where it goes. And that's what I think is the most likely outcome of this is this real, is there's going to be a, there's going to be a low VIX, low volatility going into the spring. And, you know, but we have to sort of go through this catharsis to get there.
Yeah. Well, as always, we don't have to be quite as thorough on the disclosure now that your compliance team's gotten involved, and there's like a long 3-minute recording at the end of the show of all the disclosures. But I will say, as always, do not take anything that we say on the show as investment advice, because if you're watching the show, we don't know your situation. We're not telling you what to do with your money. We're here for entertainment, education, and amusement purposes. But you can reach Matt and his team by visiting intelligentinvestment.com or give them a call at 702-655-8300. And they would love to get to know you better and help you make some of those decisions once they know a little bit more about your financial situations. But we appreciate you listening to our humble and sometimes relatively interesting takes once in a while. I think we get a little wind on the ball once in a while, so we appreciate you listening. Well, always a pleasure, man. My voice is just starting to crack, so I think we're gonna cap it there before it goes completely silent on you. Good to see you as always. See you in a couple of weeks, man.
Have a nice weekend. I will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. See you, brother.
As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com.
We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Discussions in the Intelligent Investment Show are for educational purposes only. The information presented should not be considered specific investment advice or a recommendation to take any particular course of action. Always consult with a financial professional regarding your personal situation before making investment or financial decisions. The views and opinions expressed are based on current economic and market conditions and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any statements of future expectations will come to fruition. All investing involves risk, including the potential for loss of principal. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through American Retirement Planning Group, ARPG, and United Planners are independent companies. Garrett Lill and Wealth Partners are not affiliated with ARPG or United Planners. Any endorsement that I may have given during this recording, it is important to note that I am not a client of ARPG. The views expressed should not be considered representative in any way of my past, present, or future experience with Matt or ARPG. No incentives have been provided to me in connection with any endorsements I may have given on the Intelligent Investment Show. Investing involves risk, and there is no guarantee of any future results, performance, or success.